Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy wherever they get their podcasts.
Delivering all the news, the informed views, and just telling great motorsport stories since 2003. Powered by the racetalk.com. This is On the Grid.
G'day everyone and welcome to another episode of On the Grid here on mypodcasthouse.com or on the Radio Show Limited ZRS1. Thank you for joining us. A big show coming your way. We've got a couple of young guns in the world of motorsport. Courtney Prince and Jaden Ojeda after big weekends for them. Jaden Ojeda, of course, winning the 6 hour up at Bathurst and Courtney Prince winning her class with her co-female drivers as well. Great work by them. We'll talk to them in just one sec. Richard Crowell, Mark Walker also to talk about the week in sport. Hots and knots, all that to come right here on the grid.
You're listening to the latest from around the motorsport world. On the grid.
And joining me as always off the top of the program, Richard Crowell. G'day to you.
Shebex, how are you?
Oh, mate, I'm fantastic. Probably not as happy as you. I mean, you had a very good weekend.
Happy Bathurst. It was happy Bathurst on the weekend, Shebex. Yeah. The high-tech horse Bathurst 6 hour was a beauty. But what was the overriding feeling of that event was the fact that every single person wanted to be there, was happy to be there, and even on Sunday evening, for the most part, were happy that they'd been there, which was just a lovely thing. So a really enjoyable Bathurst event, a great vibe, perfect weather across the weekend. And Shebex, what turned out to be an absolute belter of an endurance race at the end as well, with all the usual drama stories and close finishes that come with it. And we've assembled a little crew tonight to help break down the race and tell some of those stories.
And we don't normally do this. Normally we have one guest, but we've got two at this point in time. And it's sort of a little bit of a tribute, I suppose, to the future of Australian racing. It's in pretty good hands. We've got a couple of Bathurst winners here to talk to us tonight. Jaden Ojeda and Courtney Prince. Good day to you both.
Hello.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Oh, no, thanks for coming on, Courtney. Jaden, I'll kick it off with you first. Congratulations, mate. You won the big one, the 6 hour. That's a pretty good feeling.
Yeah, it was awesome to do it back-to-back with Simon. You know, 2 years in a row was awesome. And to, you know, have George a part of the team was super valuable as well. And, I think he was a real standout for me on the Sunday at the start of the race, going with all the pros that were in the cars in that X class there.
Juice, you have been doing some driving with Craft Bamboo Racing and you guys employed the Craft Bamboo Racing strategy, which was every time you could get your car to pit lane without losing a lap, you pitted. How critical was that to engineering this victory? And we should mention a back-to-back win for yourself and Simon Hodges as well.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that actually, because I ended up with the Craft Bamboo strategist, Matt Harvey, on the radio and working the strategy for us there. So he worked out the strategy quite early in the week, what we'd like to do. And yeah, we managed to put that into play really, really well. And coming towards the back end of that race, the pit stops were all quick, no CPSs, and we're really able to execute. And I still think we got pretty unlucky on the last pit stop where we went to safety car and I got stuck behind that the old Camry and lost probably 15 to 20 seconds, I reckon, just on the run to the pit lane. So otherwise, yeah, I think we could have just about rolled out in the lead even where we were. But it was, awesome strategy from Matt and played the cards really well.
And Courtney, while you didn't win the 6 hour, you still had victory on the weekend. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I won alongside the other two girls, Carly and Sue, the B1 class, which is pretty cool. Last year was my first Bathurst 6 hour and we got second. Well, we technically got third, but because of the first place getting over boosting, we then got promoted to second, but technically third. So no, it was great to have a win in the B1 class. I qualified the car on pole as well. And yeah, it was an interesting race. It was lots of fun. I did two stints. I did an hour and a bit stint after Carly jumped out and then Sue went in for an hour. So I had my hours break and then I went in for just over 2.5 hours in the last bit. And the car went really well until the last 30 minutes. It decided to keep going into limp mode, which was pretty scary.
So a little bit of history, Court. I've been liaising with some of my colleagues in the media and we've been trying to work out successful all-female combinations at Mount Panorama, and we reckon you guys have ticked every box. So first combination of all-female drivers to win the class at Mount Panorama, but also the highest outright finishing position for an all-girl team too, because Melinda Price and Karen Brewer in the supercar race in 97 and 98, they finished 11th. So you guys were 10th, so one position higher than that. So this is a little bit of history in terms of Mount Panorama. What's it like being a part of that?
Yeah, no, it's super cool. Obviously, it's a very special place, Bathurst is. And since I was a little kid, I've always watched the V8 supercars there. So it's pretty cool to be able to make some history and to be able to win there and even step on that podium was pretty surreal, always watching, I guess, your supercar drives being up there. And I never thought one day I would be there.
And Jayden, back to you. Take us through the race for you. As you said, the strategy was made a lot easier having people who knew a winning strategy or how to get the car up towards the front of the group there at Bathurst. Everything went well for you in the car. Were there any issues?
In terms of reliability, our car was super strong. I think off the back of last year, I said to Aaron Gretsch, who prepares our car, that you know we had the coldest, I reckon, race in Bathurst, just about, I reckon, ever. And we still had a lot of BMWs going out of the race with reliability problems. So we knew sort of coming into this year that, you know, we wouldn't be so lucky with a cold race. So reliability was a big part of our focus over the past 12 months. And yeah, we're the only Class X car to sort of have no problems come Sunday. But, you know, we still had our challenges throughout the race. Yeah, the strategy was to basically pit George as frequently as we could without losing the lap. And then, yeah, then I sort of jumped in with 3 hours to go and tried to pull the result out. But I think two stints there from the end, I was battling, or three stints maybe, battling with Cam. And yeah, their car was really quick. So it was a different challenge from last year where, you know, last year we probably had the quickest car come race day, whereas this year we didn't sort of have the outright pace maybe to contend in some parts. So you just had to play your cards really, really well when possible. So, you know, that meant holding off Cam for as long as we could, even though he had the 15-second penalty. There was still a concern that he could possibly drive 15 seconds up the road from us and negate the penalty. So then the second last stint, yeah, we were out of tyres was our big problem. So we delaminated the left rear, delaminated the right rear. There's a bit of a tyre shortage for a lot of us Class X cars, you know, to the point where I believe some competitors were running up and down to some of the Mustangs when a few of them bowed out the race to try to get some extra tyres that they hadn't used yet.
Wow.
And then, yeah, so the second last stint, we were really struggling. We were probably a second and a half away from the pace. And I thought we were racing for fourth or third. And, you know, all we had to do was chuck a right front tyre at it. So we figured if we're going to win the race, we better do something. So we threw a tyre at it. And obviously the strategy sort of split, gave us the track position back into play. And then, you know, it was a shame that Will had the problem he had in that last stint. But I think we really had the pace to probably put a move on as the race sort of went on there.
I'm going to give a shout out to the Sharon brothers because this M4 has become the car of production car racing of the last few years. It's been the car to beat. And it was really the Sharon brothers that brought the M4 into the class, I suppose. And the amount of work that those guys did to get those cars right, it was amazing early days. And now they seriously are the car to beat, aren't they?
Yeah, they're you know, we're talking about they might be the ultimate production car. With the type of gearbox they've got in the cars at the moment, I don't know if you ever see a car in that price bracket with a gearbox that's that reliable, you know, make it into the production car series. I don't know what's next in terms of the next car that will succeed, the M3s, M4s, M2s.
Courtney, I'll come to you in just a sec. One more for Jayden. That battle with Will Davo, just talk us through that. And you mentioned his issue, so they had a little gear selector issue where it popped into neutral and then popped back into gear. But by that point, you were well and truly passed. But another little reminder that you had last year, to be fair, when you won this race, but another little reminder of playing with the big dogs from supercars. Did you enjoy that battle? What was it like and how was that fight, not just with Wilbur, but also with Tommy Randall in the mix as well?
Yeah, it was cool. It's always always good to scrap with guys that obviously race at a super high level. There's that level of trust that you you all share that it's going to be, clean, it's going to be hard, but it's going to be fair. So to, it was a shame it was sort of short-lived. I think I had three laps before Will sort of came into problems. But, no, it was still super cool. And a massive thank you to Will and or Beric, to their team, because they helped us out with a diff on a Saturday night to help get us out of some trouble, which was quite cool and good sportsmanship on their behalf.
The sportsmanship, Courtney, in that paddock is incredible, and the vibe in that paddock is incredible. But your team, Team Buccini, were three cars. I don't remember I've ever seen such a, I don't know what the right word is, boisterous, like busy, frenetic garage. There was a lot going on in your little race team the whole weekend long. What was it like being part of that environment? And just talk about the race team and what they've assembled, because it's pretty impressive from where they've come from.
Yeah, no, for sure. Team Buccini is awesome. They're obviously a very big family team, and everyone in there is so passionate about what they do, and they definitely have a person for everything who knows everything about the cars. And production cars, as you know, can be a bit painful at times. So for example, like us, we had a diff go after quali, so we had to change it overnight. And yeah, wasn't the best, but at least we still had a car for Sunday. And then Paul's car kept having issues, and it was chucking about, and yeah, just it was always chaotic. And then they also had the third car, which a few people had leased off of them for the weekend, so it was pretty crazy. But they're all super nice, and there's so many people there and so much knowledge in that garage.
And your car had the limp mode issues, as you said, at the end. And I reckon there were 35 cars that went into limp mode at some point on the weekend. It was ridiculous. This it felt like an important race for you personally, though, Court. Would that be fair to say? No Carrera Cup drive this year. You weren't racing at the Grand Prix. You were a frustrated spectator, I know. How important was it for you to get on the grid at Bathurst and then also put in the kind of performance that you delivered?
Yeah, for sure. It's obviously been a pretty tough time over Chrissy and that for me. It was just awesome to get back into the car and get such a great result. I think it just gives me a little bit of confidence and to keep fighting to get back on the grid for next year in Carrera Cup.
Jaden, for yourself, mate, what does 2024 hold for the remainder of the year?
Yeah, I'll have some news coming out later this week with, I guess, some of my plans. But, for me, it's about...
Feel free to break it now on the show if you like.
Yeah, we won't tell anyone.
No, it depends. When does this podcast go out again?
Tomorrow morning, afternoon.
Yeah, you're going to have to wait then.
Oh, bugger.
That's cliche for us, though. So, yeah.
But no, it'll be busy, which is good. If you can be busy as a driver, it's good, and for me, I know I always drive my best when I'm always in the car. So it's been a busy start to the year, 12-hour and a lot of testing on the GT side. So, yeah, we'll keep pursuing with that.
Can we assume that it might have a three-pointed star on the front, perhaps, possibly, with what you're doing?
Possibly, yes.
Yeah, come on. I know, look, your job with Craft Bamboo at the 12-hour was very impressive, and I know Daryl O'Young, who owns that team, was very impressed, so I'm sure there's a bright future there. Courtney, what about you? This was a cool one-off opportunity. Are there plans to get back in a car in other one-off events while you're looking to get that program together to get back in Carrera Cup?
Yeah, so I'm going to be doing three or four rounds of Aussie racing cars this year. So three of them being alongside the supercar, so Townsville, Gold Coast, Tasmania, and hopefully maybe the superbike round at Phillip Island. So, yeah, just getting back in the Aussie cars. I did in 22, loved it, and got fourth in the series. So it's just such a fun category and a category that's a bit achievable price-wise. So doing that, just keeping that relationship with my sponsors until I find my feet and try and find $500,000 for next year.
Just now, you know, I own half an Aussie racing car, Courtney. So we might just, if you get near a bright orange car with Asher Johnson driving, please just be careful. All right? No, I don't mind if you pass, but please don't put a scratch on it. I can't afford to fix it.
Oh.
I'd appreciate that.
Yeah, we all would actually, because we'll hear from it for about the next 5 days if you.
Yeah,
need.
Well, the old podcast budget to get shot to pieces if that exactly. happens. So, there's no more episodes,
guys and girls. Jaden and Courtney, congratulations on your weekend. A win for both of you. Jaden, congratulations to you. A win in the 6 hours, fantastic. And from what started off as a tough time for you on the mountain there at Bathurst, the last couple of years have really turned it around for you, and it's great to see that things are going well, mate. Congratulations to you both, and we look forward to having a chat again down the track.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for having me on. Thank you.
Joe Nojoda and Courtney Prince joining us here on The Grid.
We'll be back to more On The Grid in just a second. Now, let's face it, everyone needs insurance. So when you need to renew your cover, the On The Grid hot tip is to give our mates at City Rural Insurance Brokers a call. City Rural have been dealing with the insurance industry for years, and they've got more than 50 years of industry experience. Need insurance for your business? They'll sort it. Are you a landlord and want to cover your rental properties or investments? They're your people. Or are you like me and need professional cover in case you say something silly on a podcast? City Rural can sort that too. They did it for me, and it was super easy. The best thing of all is that City Rural are, like you and I, motorsport people. If you've watched car racing this year, you might have even seen their logo on cars like the legendary Richard Mork Super Ute, among others. They know our game, and they know the people that follow it. So support the people who back our industry. And when you need to throw a new setup at your insurance cover, drop Andrew and his team at City Rural Insurance Brokers a line, and they'll fix you up. Head to cityrural.au or follow the links on theracetalk.com. City Rural, better cover, better service. And now, back to the podcast.
There's more great motorsport stories coming next on The Grid.
And we say g'day to Mark Walker, who joins us for the second half of the program. Hello, Mark.
Honey Shbecky, Richard Crail. Richard, what are we going to do with you? What are you going to do this weekend?
Yeah, good question. Don't know. I haven't seen the Australian Grand Prix yet, so I might rewatch that.
I can tell you the results.
Okay, yeah, I heard Carlos Sainz won. I'm going to be sitting at home missing being at Bathurst because I had a great weekend. That race is something very, very unique. And like every trip to Bathurst is great. Some are better than others. The 12-hour, we all know, is incredibly special. And the 12-hour is international Bathurst. The October Bathurst is historically significant big Bathurst, and there is nothing bigger than that week. But the Thrifty Bathurst 500, we hope never happens again. But the Easter Bathurst, the 6-hour, is truly, truly unique. And it is unique, and we touched on this at the start with the two kids that we've just had on. It's unique because it's a race where every single person that is there wants to be there. And I know that sounds silly. And if you're listening at home going, well, surely they all want to be there at the 12-hour and they all want to be there in October. And yes, they do, but it's also part of a bigger picture. You know, October's part of the championship.
It's
the race
job that
underlines the budget for most of the teams and sponsorship and things like that. The 12-hour is an international race now where the stakes are incredibly high to win it. It's big boy, serious car racing. And I'm not saying for a minute the 6-hour isn't, because it is. And you saw that at the end of the race with how hard Jaden and Will Davison and Tom Randall were driving those cars. But everybody in that paddock is just there having a great time. And they're loving it, and they genuinely want to be there. They're not there because they have to be there. They're there because they've made a choice. And even Will Davison, and Will says this on record, is that it's a choice for Will Davison to team up with Tim Lay and Berrick Linton, who are friends. But at the same time, he gets to go and stay with his mate. Tim's one of his best mates. Ray and the kids come down, and they have a weekend in Orange with Tim's family, and there's some car racing as well, which is like a bonus. And I love that. And then I love the fact that at the end of the race, Will was disappointed for not winning Bathurst. So you get both sides of it. And that's what makes the 6-hour truly special. And the other interesting thing, boys, and I don't know what it was like watching from home, but not once did I feel like that event at the weekend lacked for not having TCR or GT World Challenge or something else there. It, not once did I go, I wish we had another high profile national category. There just was no, there was no remorse for not having there from there, from my point of view. I'm not sure what it was like from home, but I think it stood on its own 2 feet for what it was. And it was really special.
You know, that's fickle.
You've covered off all my notes perfectly. Like, you look at the, as a punter experience trackside, you look at the 12-hour, where the supports are Group S and combined sedans, whatever. They, you could have anything there. It doesn't really matter. It's a side show to the main show. The Bathurst 500, like you mentioned, must never happen again, but they had the Super 2s, TCMs, Super Utes, Aussie racing cars. You know, then you come to the 6-hour. It's the accessible one. It's got the production cars, the HQs, Pulsars, XLs, Super Minis, Formula Fords and pre-production. You got the 1000 this year where we're going to have Super 2, Carrera Cup, V8 Super Utes, Toyota 86s and something else that I don't think we've quite figured out yet. And then you get to the Bathurst International this year, which I think that stacks up as a pretty tasty race meeting in its own right with the TCR, Trans Am, production cars, National Sports Sedans, Radicals, GT World Challenge and GT4.
Mm.
Like, there's some compelling reasons to go to that meeting now, I think. Whereas when you took away the GT World Challenge from that, for instance, in the past, it's a good selling point to be there. And to your other point, Richard, there's been a bit of chat on the internet. Oh, the BMWs. Oh, should we have the BMWs? Oh, pro drivers. Should we have pro drivers out there? What made that experience for me on the weekend was those pro drivers driving those BMWs way harder than they should have.
Yep.
They were awesome. You got these things doing 2 minute 21s around Bathurst with no aero.
Yep.
That's fast.
Yeah.
Like, and they were having to pedal it. It was an easy thing to do. They had to drive them bloody hard. It was a good thing to watch.
Last lap of the race and the juices sideways through the kink at the chase.
But they were like that every lap.
Correct. Yeah. They're great to watch. And I've got a not and a what around this topic that I'll get to later on that I would love to engage you both with. But yeah, I agree with you on that. And they are cool to watch. And you know, for all the complaints, the traffic side of it. Now, there was some pretty dodgy stuff that occurred, and that happens in every race. But the traffic is such a big part of that race, and it's genuinely a factor. Way more so than it is at the 12-hour when they come up on a GT4 car that's 10 seconds a lap slower. In this race, you're coming up against a Toyota Camry that's 50 seconds a lap slower. But it adds such a different element to this race that still gives it that old school Bathurst Enduro from the 60s when there were massive discrepancies from every car from, you know, the HDT Mustangs or Monaros to GDHO Falcons right down to, you know, little Isuzus running at the back of the field. So I love it. I it's such a cool race, but the vibe of the whole thing, if you can describe event like that, was what got me this year. And I wasn't the only one. Like, Aaron Noonan was on our broadcast team, the sleuth, and he hadn't been to the 6-hour in its current incarnation before. And he was the same. He's like, is it always this happy? I was like, well, yeah, it kind of is. Like, everyone's just having a good time and they just want to be here. And they weren't the only ones to say that. And I think that's what makes it really, really unique. Really, really cool weekend. And a great race in the end as well. Like, it was a genuinely entertaining car race, I think, for a good chunk of the 6 hours.
Looked like a decent crowd too.
Yeah, so just 18,000 for the 3 days was the attendance for the event. And like, attendance at that event is driven by how many support categories you've got, primarily. Mm-hmm. But there were 318 competitors across 6 supports and the 6-hour. But they sold over 500 campgrounds for the first time in the event history. So it's probably 1,200 people camping, you know, within the paddock campground up behind the paddock area. So there was a terrific vibe there.
It was $100 to camp there for the weekend. Yeah. I mean, that's, you cheap, can't get a campground in Australia for $100, bucks, let alone inside the pits of Bathurst.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And the irony is that some of the photographers were camping and they got access to the inside of the circuit in their vehicle because they had a camping pass. But if you had a stock standard media pass, no bueno, no internal circuit access. So that's a little life hack for you there if you're applying for media at the next race.
Support categories. Take us through. Formula Ford's had a few safety cars.
I don't want to burn a knot yet, Shebex.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but look, there was a lot of caution and a lot of red in the supports, which was unfortunate. But what I will say is that when they were good, they were really, really good.
Yeah.
Really, really good. A highlight was 3.5 laps of Aaron Noonan and Gary O'Brien commentating together, HQ Holdens.
Yes.
So you had the purveyor of Australian motorsport history calling with Australian motorsport history, calling on track Australian motorsport history. So I thought that worked really well. And that was to those two boys were like, it was like Christmas. They were just having a lovely time, which is fantastic. No, the support program was good and varied and diverse. The Super Mini Challenge I actually really enjoyed. That was quite cool. Mm. And some of those things are rocket ships, but they're quite good fun. I really enjoyed that. And improved production was sensational. And when they weren't shunting into each other at Skyline, the XLs were breathtakingly good. They just had a lot of dramas. But there were moments... There were moments where they were 4 or 5 wide at points on Conrod, and it was pretty exciting stuff. So it was a good program.
But back to the main race, and it was almost a support race in itself, was the Miners. You had freaking VW Golf 4th outright on the lead lap. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Like who on earth had that on the bingo card? Why don't we have somebody out there with a Hyundai i30N? I've got no idea.
Like, good question.
And those things come with a track warranty as well, mind you. Mm. So it's literally sponsored motorsport. You can't go wrong.
Yep.
And then you had the V8s come good. Like, obviously, the turbos, you know, whether it was that having to turn the turbos off, but, you know, we've seen on the socials comments that the Subaru that was running 5th late outright, which was an awesome effort in itself, probably succumbed to that whole turning on and off again in the pits sort of thing. But the V8s were great. Like, they were right up there in the mix when all the X-Class cars were having to take on their extra pit stops early on. But, you know, still, what was it? Seaton and the Gomesall family, they were 5th. So
And a lap back. Like, the Camaro was on the lead lap. Mm.
Yep.
I walked back to Ridges on Sunday night, and we were going to pop into town to get a dinner and debrief with the on-air team. And I walked down to reception, and there was a large group of people wearing Chevy shirts, and it was Team Camaro. And I just walked out to them and went, "Oh, boys." And they all burst out laughing, and because they were so close to nailing the big results on debut.
Yeah.
They were going to win their class, and they were probably going to finish 4th. And they had such a perfect day until it unraveled at their final set of stops. But that's that race. And like they got their car back on track and ultimately finished 4th in class. And Nathan Callahan said to me after the race, he said, "Well, ultimately 4th pays the same prize money as 3rd, so it doesn't really matter, does it?" But that was the same thing. Like they'd had such a good day and they were deflated, but at the same time, they were like, "We're like serious contenders in this thing now." So moving forward, that's going to be a great storyline to talk about as well. But yeah, there's so many cool stories like that in that race. And, you know, second in Class B was the BMW 335i that won. Sorry, third in Class B, I think they were in the end, that won the Bathurst 12-hour in 2007. And that car's now done 23,000 kilometres of racing at Mount Panorama alone.
Jeez.
And it's still a podium contender and for a point led the race outright with Matt Charter driving. Like, who would have picked that to be a thing in that race? But that's what makes it so cool.
No, nice stuff. Moving ahead to Formula One, Japanese Grand Prix this week. Congratulations to Max Verstappen on getting back onto the top of the podium.
Yeah, geez, revenge was swift, wasn't it?
Yeah, 100%. I want to bring up something. I was driving back from the MCG on Sunday night after the footy and having a listen to Cameron Vandendungen and on SEN.
Yep.
And he brought up a point. I don't always agree with Cameron, but I sort of agree with him on this, and I thought I'd run it past you, Blakes, to get your thoughts on it. Mm. Cameron came out with the thought that there should be a Division 1 and a Division 2, effectively, in Formula 1. So the bottom 5 teams, which we all know never have any opportunity of winning a championship, let alone winning a race, would sort of race in their own separate category, I suppose, to an extent. So you'd have the top 5 teams racing for the world championship and the bottom 5 teams still racing against those cars, but for a separate championship and the possibility of even a promotion and relegation in those two divisions should one team finish at the bottom and one team finish at the top. I sort of don't mind it because it adds another factor into it. We do it in Porsche. We have Pro and Pro-Am racing against each other. It sort of has a little bit of cred to it.
So there's a couple of things. And Cam and I, for full clarity, have had this argument external to anything being recorded.
Okay, yep, cool.
So the race within a race thing has happened before in Formula One. So back in the days when turbos came in, there was genuinely a class for best Cosworth V8 finisher, best normally aspirated V8 while they were still running those versus the turbos because they were never going to win outright unless you were Keke Rosberg in 1983. I don't think that should be a thing because ultimately the objective of Formula One with their regulations and with the cost cap has to be to remove the hierarchy as it stands anyway. So it shouldn't matter. It shouldn't matter if you're Sauber or if you're RB. You should, ultimately, the goal of Formula One must be that if you're in an RB and you've got a good driver and good strategy and you're on your day, you're good. You should be able to contend for a Grand Prix. Formula One has to get to that point, in my opinion, much like it is in NASCAR or IndyCar, when on any given Sunday, you don't know who's going to win the car race because something cool could happen. Whereas Formula One, unless it breaks, it's going to be Max Verstappen, and then it's probably going to be a Ferrari. So I don't think you need that because putting that in place would imply that Formula One won't get to that level where if you're in one of the smaller teams, which let's remember are now profitable business enterprises, they make money, so there's no excuses, right? Putting that system in place would imply that there are no plans to try and achieve some form of performance balance across the field to encourage the opportunity for other teams to win races. So that's my view on that point. The other one on promotion and relegation, so Cam's a soccer fan, and that's where that's come from.
Yeah.
So it's fine in soccer where the same – how many people were on a soccer team?
11.
So the same 11 people – that play for Wrexham AFC, who are currently in League One or whatever it is at the bottom of the four tiers of English football, like it's the same 11 people that play for them that would roll out for Man U. So there's no difference in organisation and all that. It's just skill level and resource behind the scenes. But the difference between Haas and Prima, who run a couple of really good Formula 2 cars, is enormous. Aside from the fact it's about $100 million a year in budget difference. So to go to a Prima and say, congratulations, you've been promoted to Formula One, you've made it to the Premier League. I mean, the effort and the money they would have to find to tool up, let alone building racing cars, which they don't do right now, they buy them. I don't think it's feasible. I really don't think it's feasible. It's more feasible doing it in Supercar and Super 2, but even then it wouldn't work. So I don't agree with that.
No, fair call.
Shebex, how would you feel if you'd lobbed up to the V8 Media Awards and they gave out a fifth place trophy for the best podcast, fifth best podcast of the year?
We'd have a lot of trophies.
Yeah,
we'd have a lot of trophies. But you're just celebrating mediocrity there, aren't you?
Oh, well, I'm hearing you. Yes, correct. Everyone doesn't get a medal. You're right.
I'm not bringing my kid up to finish fifth.
Fourth, maybe?
Oh, whatever.
I ain't prepared.
Japanese Grand Prix, what do we expect?
Well, the story to follow, I mean, yeah, Max is probably going to win, but...
Daniel Ricciardo's the story, isn't it?
Yeah, but I honestly, Piastri, like, that thing was a rocket ship there last year, and he got a podium. So the McLaren's way better now than it was at the same point last season. So where are they going to land? Are they going to be the closest contender? That, for mine, will be interesting, in which case OP could be on for a podium, and who knows, second place, and then if the Red Bull packs itself again... Sky's the limit. There's good stories coming out of Albert Park, aren't there? But yeah, Daniel's going to be under some pressure. But like Sergio Perez wasn't particularly brilliant in Melbourne, was he? So the question's going to start popping up there again about who gets that second Red Bull seat. And the fact that people are even asking that in what is still comfortably the fastest car in Formula One, for mine, is ridiculous because that car should be winning Grand Prix when Max doesn't. And yet Checo finished behind two Ferraris and two McLarens in Melbourne. So I think that's watching how he goes is going to be a big question mark.
Seriously, though, if Daniel gets moved on from RB, he's probably not getting the second seat at Red Bull, is he?
No. No.
Yeah.
No, he should go to America and race NASCAR. That's what he should do.
Yeah. Or IndyCar.
NASCAR, I think.
NASCAR?
He loves it.
Speaking of NASCAR, what do we have on the weekend, Mark?
Richmond. First of
yes,
all...
Yes, go Tigers. Great win over Sydney.
Firstly, they really set the stage for the weekend when they buggered up the spelling of NASCAR on the infield grass where it said nurse car. So that was a fail that really kicked things off there. I guess another thing from that part of the world is Cam Waters is racing at Martinsville next weekend in the truck series. So that's going to be a bit interesting. We're going to have a few supercar drivers over there. Of course, Van Gisel will be racing the Xfinity race at Richmond on the weekend. He qualified 12th, finished 14th. He got screwed by a lack of cautions at the end of the race. There was a caution with about 70 laps to go. All the teams had one set of tyres left. Those who pitted got big results. Those who didn't, like SVG, who got nothing when the inevitable safety car never came, got screwed. So he kind of got a bit unlucky. He was probably better than that result, but he did a nice job. And actually, a bit of a hot also goes to SVG. He's launched an exhibit at the NASCAR Hall of Fame from his Chicago street race win.
Getting so in early, isn't he?
Cool thing, isn't it? He's had exactly one win. He's in the Hall of Fame. So good on you. Then there was the Easter Sunday night cup race. It was rain delayed and started on a damp track with wet tyres, which was somewhat contentious because they haven't quite figured out how to do pit stops in the wet yet. So they'll still have to work on that. It was a bit of an average race until it unraveled late. We'll try and get this sequence of events right. So Denny Hamlin won the race off pit road to lead the field to the green white checker restart. He absolutely jumped the restart zone. And he then raced the buggery out of Martin Truex Jr., his teammate. Denny went on to win the race. Martin Truex Jr. wound up racing angry with Kyle Larson for third behind Joey Logano, who finished second. And then to cap it all off, Martin Truex Jr. smashed into Denny Hamlin on the cool-down lap. So it was great stuff. Very NASCAR. Love it.
Green white check. That was the longest run of races without a green white checker coming to an end since they introduced it, wasn't it? It's like 15 races without a GWC finish.
The other stat is that the race there was the closest race in NASCAR history between first and last because
all
the cars finished and the car that finished last was only three laps off the pace, so no one had any dramas.
Wow.
That is a good stat.
Think about it.
It is. Good, good, good.
Hots and knots.
Let's dive in.
I've
burnt a vast majority of mine talking about the 6 hour, so mine will be short. A few other little tidbits. Record camping sales I thought was a good thing, so people getting on the whole let's go camping at Bathurst at Easter, that's good. The other thing I'd like to say is that there were a lot of volunteers. It was almost a record number for Easter in the history of that race, which is 8 years. And in the past, it's been a challenge getting volunteers for flag marshals, event officials, things like that at Easter. But this year, a lot of people were really keen to be there. I'm not sure if it's just the fact it was an early Easter this year in March rather than April. I don't know, but that was great.
It's also you've got 2 days there that you're not burning through work days, holidays sort of thing, having to go there. So
yeah, but we have struggled at Easter in the past, so I don't know why it was different this year, but I'm glad it was because they're great. The Barguanas. Genuine TV talent there. Jason, we know, is a good commentator, and he was outstanding in the box throughout the 6 hour, but... Benny Bargs, he is a natural pit lane reporter, and we picked him because we thought he had it, but it turns out does. He did a super job.
If Benny's ever sick, just get Jude to fill in for him, and you'll have the exact same quality.
Jude was there too, but no, I liked what Ben brought to the table there. I thought that was terrific. Hot, the tradition, and long may it last, of the epic late-night Bathurst repair / oh, geez, we need to drive back to Sydney to get our widget that we've forgotten. I reckon there were 10 cars over the weekend that were in either of the two positions. So one of the Evos, for example, had a misfire and drove back to Penrith to get on the dyno, where it still had a misfire. They couldn't cure it, so they drove it back to race it anyway. The Mercedes-AMG C63 Anthony Levitt Luke King car broke a crank angle sensor, so I had to drive to Sydney to pick one of those up. And the car that won Class E basically was written off on Saturday. They were genuinely out of the race. And I saw the two front chassis rails on that car after the crash. This is the 1-800 Lasagna sponsored Mazda. And looking at those chassis rails, which were really, really badly bent. Like, think of something that's bent and add some more bentness, and that's how bent those front chassis rails were. And yet they straightened it up and sent it on the racetrack. We'll probably still write the car off, though. So whether it was good to race, who knows? Glad they did, because it turns out they won their class. What a story. I hope stories like that never disappear from Bathurst, because they are truly special. And seeing people absolutely flogged, like properly exhausted on Sunday night, because they've basically not stopped working since they rolled into the track because of all these dramas, but they're still so happy they made it to the checkered flag in 35th position. That is just mint. Hot the Camry. I've got to hot the Camry because at no point did I think that car would get as much attention as it did. It got a lot of attention. It became the cult favorite. So genuine messages on social going, you haven't told us where the Camry is in 10 laps. Please update us.
I hotted the Camry before the race event. Like, that was the first thing that went in the power rankings, and I was right. Yeah. I'm so you happy about that.
100%. It was outrageously good. Sensational. Hot the girls. So we had Courtney Prince on early on. The last time an all-female combination had such success in a major Bathurst Enduro, three ladies by the name of Diana Layton, Ann Bennett and Pam Murison drove a Simca in the 1962 Armstrong 500 in its final farewell at Phillip Island before the race moved to Bathurst, and they finished third in class.
So it wasn't a Bathurst.
No, it wasn't even a Bathurst. Of course, Castrol Cougars finished 11th and 12th. So well done to Team Puccini, Courtney Prince and the others. What a sensational performance. Class win at Bathurst, 10th outright. First time it's ever happened. Bit of Bathurst history. Love it. Hot the people who had the forethought to top the fuel tank up on the safety car ahead of the final 2 hours of the race. True story. They did. Good call. Needed it. Hot the Camaro. We've talked about that. That thing was rad. Really, really cool car. And then a final standing hot that need mentioning, hot Reckless Brewing and hot the National Motor Racing Museum, because obviously.
Because they are. Mark.
North Wilkesboro Speedway, the historic track that's now the home of the NASCAR All-Star Race, had a part of its grandstand collapse, which ostensibly is a knot. However, it seemingly uncovered a moonshine cave, which was rumored to be there. So that's freaking hot in my book.
Yeah.
Liam Lawson, 4 times out of 5 last year, he beat Yuki Tsunoda. Last year, Yuki beat Daniel 4-3. This year, Yuki's beating Daniel 2-1. I love Dan. F1 is better with Dan in it. But at some stage, the excuses have to stop, and he has to go back to that Dan that won 8 Grand Prix. You know, whether it was McLaren or RB, the common denominator in Dan's problem seems to be Dan. I hope he figures it out, and I hope he figures it out real quick, because this is a team that has shown in the past that they don't have patience for a lack of results, especially when they have a hot Liam Lawson waiting in the wings. I hope Dan figures it out real quick. So fingers crossed that's a thing.
Like this weekend.
Like this weekend. Probably a good time to start pulling your finger out. I don't know if it's hot or not, but Max Verstappen is seemingly such a massive fan of rubbish motorsport that he's lashed out $7 million for a house at the Thermal Club. So I guess he can sit in bed and watch the non-championship IndyCar race. So that'll be fun. And on real estate, GT4 driver Steve Jakic is selling his Gold Coast home, which features a 15-car hoist garage system and the adjacent 6,636-meter house, which goes under the hammer on April 20th. So hopefully, once you've purchased the house, you've still got some coin spare for the toys to fill up the garage.
Did you say 15 car hoist?
Yeah, a 15 car garage set up with all these hoists and stuff.
God almighty.
Pretty flash.
I need that.
Richard, I reckon one of your all-time favourite things you've done in TV commentary was trying to call that rain delay at the Bathurst 1000 when the shootout didn't happen.
Oh, totally, yes.
Like, you live for that, yep. You know, the rain delay and the cricket sort of thing. So I reckon you absolutely relished it on Saturday when there was a six-car HQ Holden party down at the Elbow and they had to dash to Orange or wherever to fetch some more tilt trays. Mm. And you had to fill the commentary during that downtime. What did you have to commentate?
I commentated a wedding, Mark.
You sure did. How did that go for you?
For me, it was a first.
It probably seemed that way, yeah, from home, I reckon.
I honestly didn't know what to say. Because what do you say? Normally at a wedding, you're sitting there watching it quietly.
You could have channeled Bill Laurie and Tony Greig from their wedding days in World Series cricket at the Adelaide Oval.
No, but I did maybe theorise that they could perhaps have the honeymoon at Ridges Mount Panorama Resort, and the reception could be at Reckless Brewing. But I'd like, it was lovely. But it was a strange scenario. We had planned to cover that regardless. We knew it was happening. We knew that it would be in the garage number 26 at 3:30. That was all planned. We knew that. What we didn't plan for is a lengthy delay because of the HQ shunt and a need to pad and fill time. And then we found ourselves commentating a wedding. And not my thing. Not my thing. I will stick to car racing.
Perhaps your thing was the NASCAR Xfinity race when Joey Gase got fenced by Dawson Cram, to which Joey hurled his boot lid at Dawson's still-moving car. Fantastic. Yep. And finally from me, since the AGP, I'm now on Valtteri Bottas TikTok, and my online experience is so much better for it. It is so random. I love it. Brilliant. Tap it into my veins. Thank you.
Couple of hots from me. One to you, Richard, in your role as an executive producer of that TV coverage on the weekend. Well done. You put a great team together, and the coverage was fantastic. So congratulations to you all up there. Second hot from me was also Craig Baird and his ability to try and explain the situation between Matty Payne and Cam Waters at the AGP, where Cam, of course, got fenced by Matty. I'm not sure if you guys have seen it on social media.
Yep.
Yeah, very good explanation. It told us the whole story, and I just wish we could do that every week.
Yeah, some people. It's a Sleuth does a podcast with that every week. Some people don't like it. Some people are against him explaining that.
For what reason?
Oh, they just don't think an umpire should explain his decisions. But
yeah,
it's their own.
It's good for me.
Yeah, no, I like it.
Knots.
One of the worst nightmares when one is staying in a hotel, especially a reasonably nice hotel, which is conveniently adjacent to your workplace, and has an excellent view out the balcony, is a fire alarm. So at 5:36 a.m. on Friday morning, when the fire alarm went off, when old mate on level 4 or 5 overcooked the bacon, it was irritating. That was fine, and hopefully he was fined the $1,800 that it costs for a emergency services call out. Then the fire alarm went off again on Saturday evening. We had departed the hotel, so we weren't to blame, but this time there was genuine smoke in the halls, and people were properly actually walked out of the hotel, which I noted no one did at 5:40 a.m. on on Friday morning. So that was a thing. And then you think, okay, well, one fire alarm in a weekend is rare because you don't often get a fire alarm when you're staying at a hotel. Two is like, come on. Three, probably start having a look at yourself. So when the fire alarm went off again on Sunday morning, relatively early, I was actually up and about to walk over to the track at this point, so it didn't matter. That was irritating. And then, the amusing thing is when the fire warden comes on the PA system over the speakers that go into every room quite loudly, I might say, ended in, this is, there's no cause for alarm, there's no fire, emergency services have gone. You may resume your regular activities, which at 5:44 a.m. on a Friday morning.
Might have been sleeping.
I was in the middle of a very nice dream that was absolutely impossible to resume. So that's not great. So, you know, one fire alarm, two, okay, but three, probably time to stop letting your guests cook in your hotel rooms, I reckon, or invest in better and less sensitive smoke detectors. Alternatively, turn them off.
I don't know if that's really allowed, Richard.
Yeah. I like
pump the brakes on that one.
A knot, and this is a genuine knot, staffing over Easter, it appears to be incredibly difficult at the moment, and several places in B-Town were understaffed, and we're apologising for that, and food and drink took a little bit longer. So, yeah, penalty rates, all the stuff going on in the world, probably not great.
Mm.
Formula Ford, I hate doing this, because when they were racing, it was breathtaking.
Mm.
Sometimes a bit too much breathtaking. I thought that it was really, really disappointing how much shunting there was going on in Formula Ford. And I have to give it a knot because we call it like it is on this pod and we need to do that. And unfortunately, I don't think it was a brilliant return for Formula Ford, National Formula Ford to the mountain. The historic stuff that's been there for the last couple of years was better in terms of getting more laps, more racing, because the stakes are probably lower. But a bunch of teenagers in National Formula Ford, unfortunately, there were a lot of big crashes and they did not get a lot of green laps at all. Now, yes, you can say that with the other categories as well, but Formula Ford still has its role in young drivers. And while I applaud them getting to Bathurst, they didn't have a great weekend, which is a shame because when they were racing, it was genuinely breathtaking stuff. Like it was, as Mark will attest to, and this is somewhat of an in-joke, and for that I apologise, but it was Simmons Plains National Formula Ford spec. It was it was lose your hair stuff. So that was a frustrating thing. And big crashes in HQs and Excels were a knot as well, which is a shame. A preemptive knot for the inevitable column or opinion piece or something that will pop out, I'm sure, maybe by the time this podcast goes live, maybe later, saying that the Bathurst 6 hour should be a GT4 race. It should not be a GT4 race. Go and get your own. Not MotoGP fans complaining that Liberty Media, who have bought MotoGP, will ruin MotoGP. Yes, because obviously they control all of the technical and sporting regulations. They don't. And obviously the billions of dollars of additional revenue, the millions of new fans and new reach that otherwise unthought of have been terrible for Formula One's global exposure, which has now made all 10 of their racing teams worth somewhere in excess of $800 million. Imagine what Liberty's going to do with a racing product that's actually good. Amazing. And finally, this is more... it's not even a what. It's just a question I'm throwing out there. And I say this purely as a fan more than someone involved in the race or whatever. I wonder if the Motorsport Australia production car regs need a little look and we need to get everybody together and have a grown-up conversation that perhaps it's time we pull the Beamers back a little bit and make them at the same level as the Mustang and the Camaro so that that can be the outright battle to inject those extra cars in. I don't mind the Bimmers at all. I think they're great. And you touched on it earlier, Mark. They're awesome to watch at pace. Like, they're really cool. But they're 2 seconds a lap quicker than a Ford Mustang and 2 seconds a lap quicker-ish than the Camaro. Imagine just reining them back a little bit, just a little bit, so that that Camaro could be an outright contender. The Seaton Mustang, the Quinn Mustang could be an outright contender in that race. I think that would be terrific. But it needs to be done with sensitivity for the people that have spent all this money building the Bimmers to make sure that they still have a realistic shot at winning the Bathurst 6 hour for their investment. So I'm just throwing it out there. I'd love to see it as a race fan to see some other brands have a shot at it because there's nothing else that's going to come into Class X anytime soon unless Tesla magically invents a battery that will do 800 Ks at Bathurst at race speed, which won't happen.
Be good to see though.
No, actually, I'm not even
No, fair enough. Mark?
By the time this podcast drops, it has been 125 days since Max Verstappen has won a Grand Prix on a Sunday. Is he washed up?
Retire now.
Yeah.
Pull a pin, buddy. A scheduling disaster. The Chinese F1 Sprint is on at the exact same time as the Super V8 race in New Zealand on Saturday, April 20th. We're all going to be split-screening that on KO, I guess, except for you there, Richard, because you'll be in New Zealand, I guess.
Yeah. Yep.
Sorry about that.
Yes, I will.
Former tennis star Jelena Dokic was one of the ultimate casualties from the Australian Grand Prix when she required medical attention after Fernando Alonso speared it through the Turn 11 gravel track right in front of the Mercedes corporate tent, which sprayed bullets in the form of those river stones, with Jelena copping a rock to the eye. I said this exact same bloody thing after Adelaide last year. Perhaps we need to poke out someone more famous than a tennis player's eye and we get something done about all these shitty gravel traps that spray bullets into the crowd anytime anyone ever goes in it. Look, the same thing happened with George Russell. You look at some of those fan videos from when he fenced it, they all got absolutely sprayed. So, yeah.
No different to going to Avalon and getting sprayed by the dirt plugs.
Yeah, but you're an idiot for going to Avalon. I don't know. I think there's probably a better way of doing this. Yeah. Anyway, it's a man-made racetrack. They can do better. In other injury things, and it was a horrendous weekend up at the South Bennet Motorsports Park for motocross at Kingaroy, behind Queensland Sunshine Coast. They required four separate helicopter evacuations in 2 days.
Christ, no. Really?
Wouldn't you pull the pin after three helicopter rides?
Yeah, I reckon.
Think about pulling the pin, maybe, yeah. The country of Belgium, unusual for a country to cop a knot, but they could legitimately claim to have three F1 drivers, but they've got zero. Max was born there, and his mum is from Belgium. Lando's mum is from Belgium, and ditto Lance Stroll. But here we are. They have nothing, so bad luck to Belgium, who have no Formula 1 drivers.
That's great.
Changing tack now. That Ryder Quinn stack. Holy moly. Like, you have all this brilliant racing, and then something like that happens, and the cold, hard reality of Mount Panorama strikes home, and it sucks the enthusiasm out of you, really, doesn't it? It's such a tricky corner, and I've never seen a car rip up like that and spear in there head first. Probably not since 1993 when that yellow Commodore absolutely harpooned Dickie Johnson in the same spot.
Yep.
Glad to see him walk away and get out of hospital a day later. They build those Quins pretty tough. Thoughts also with those officials there, because that flag point, it's sort of out of the way and you never expect to cop one there. And those flaggies cop one absolutely head on. And, you know, you sit there for 3 days straight and you're not expecting that sort of stuff to happen. Mm. So thoughts with those guys as well. You mentioned it, Rich, the support races, 12 out of the 18 races were cut short with yellows or red flags, which is pretty garbage.
Yeah. Pulsars did a good job, though.
Yeah, they got three clean races in a Saturday. They were awesome.
Impressive. Mm.
Finally, not a lot of people left on Twitter, is there?
No.
You know how hard that makes putting together the power rankings?
Yeah.
That's a good knot.
Get back to Twitter, people.
Yeah.
Join the conversation, please.
Final knot from me. Lightning delays at sporting events. When has this become an actual thing?
It became a thing in NASCAR in the States after fans got killed to death by lightning. So that's why they have lightning holds at the races now and they evacuate the grandstands. Oh,
lightning holds at the football. We had a half an hour delay on Monday with Geelong Hawthorn. It's just very... And the thing is, they've actually... The scope is, if there's lightning within 10 kilometres of the venue, we're going to whack it off. So, I don't know, it just seems weird. I understand health and safety and all that sort of stuff, but are we going to stop Bathurst at 5:55, 10 laps to go, because there might be lightning?
But you can't evacuate the grounds at Bathurst, can you? You can't really seek cover unless it's under a tree that's going to get struck by lightning.
That's a very good point. Well, let's hope it never gets to that. Boys, well done. Enjoy your rare weekend off, Richard. Hopefully you're going to see Adelaide v Melbourne and catch a game of footy for a change.
No, steering well clear of anything Adelaide City related due to Gather Round being on. Good luck to them. It's a tremendous event, and well done to the Premier of South Australia and his team for putting that on, but I will be avoiding that like the plague.
Actually, it's supposed to be this weekend. There's also the Junior National Athletics Championships being run in Adelaide as well.
Absolutely no idea.
Yeah, there you go. It is supposed to be. Mark, thank you. Have a great weekend.
I'll try to, yes.
And thank you for joining us right here on The Grid. We'll catch you next week.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at radiolemans.com.